Back chat.
Politics and current affairs.
Back chat.
Your alternative to talk back.
It's Saturday, January 27th of 2024. So wild to say that. And Back Chat is back, baby. We're back louder than ever. We're broadcasting from the Gadigal land of the Eora Nation and pay our respects to elders past and present. This week's a very significant week, one of mourning. So I really recommend all of our listeners from wherever you're tuning in from to connect with your local history, to actually engage with your Indigenous community and do your bit, show up. And for our first show back in 2024, Backchat's going to be hearing from Indigenous voices and talking about issues directly affecting the Indigenous community in the wake of the referendum result about the conversation surrounding Indigenous rights and sovereignty are more important than ever. Howdy, my name's Tanita Rizagi and I'm joined by the lovely Holly Bain. Holly, what is up?
It's great to be back, Tanita. Look, this week we are chatting to Dr. Peter Lewis, President of National Advocacy Association, ANTAR, and one of the founding members of the Australians for Native Title and Reconciliation in Victoria. And we'll be chatting about the future of the 26th of Jan.
Later on, we're going to be hearing from Kieran Stewart Asherton from Black People's Union about some of the parallels between Indigenous Australian struggles and that of Palestinian people too.
And before that, we are chatting to Phoebe McIlwraith, a Bundjalung and Wurrumbai saltwater woman based on Gadi and One Country. She is a multidisciplinary Koori creative with a background in policy, political economy and law at the University of Newcastle. And most recently, she's a journalist. The multi-hyphenate continues.
Slay, mummy.
Back chat, back talk.
Yesterday was Invasion Day and across the country rallies were held along with a host of events amplifying Indigenous voices. To discuss the day and more, we're joined by Phoebe McIlwraith, a Bundjalung and Wurrumbai saltwater woman. Phoebe, thank you so much for joining us.
Jabini Jabu, Nunyaguyin. Hello, my friends. It's so good to be back.
Thank you for coming back on. So tell us, how are you feeling?
I mean, tired, but actually in a very weird way, I feel like my cup's been full. It's been completely refilled by just being around Black people, and I think that just showed the strength of how we were able to come together yesterday. So real tired, a little dusty, but actually the cup's quite full.
Love.
You covered a lot yesterday for Vice and Refinery 29. Yeah. What was the energy like on the ground?
Yeah, I think there was a really different energy because as a Black fella, you know, you observe Invasion Day, our day of mourning every single year. And there was a really distinct change from last year. I think there was a lot of uncertainty at last year's rally, especially with the referendum coming up. And since we've been able to sit with the result for a couple months, there was just this really electric feeling in the air. I think people were quite angry and they were willing to show up despite the heat. Like, it got to around 40 degrees in Sydney yesterday, and so that just showed, and thousands of people showed up in 40 degree weather, which is absolutely crazy to me. The fact that people were just so willing to come out and show and put their body on the line in that type of weather. Yeah, I think there was just such a different energy.
And something that, you know, you and I have spoken about is how people choose to engage on certain days and how they show up consistently, especially with, you know, the Israel and Palestinian conflict heating up. And we see how, like, people show up to these rallies and now for Invasion Day. What do you have to say around that?
I think my gut response to that is that I have to be Aboriginal every day. So why do people get to pick and choose whether to support me every day? My people have to go through injustice and the exploitation of our homelands every single day on this continent. We've had to put up with that for over 230 years. And so when people find out about our movements, it's so loved and it's so welcomed. We're 3% of the population. We can't get justice with just us, especially because we're not the ones perpetrating violence against ourselves. So we need to convince other populations that are being complicit in that violence to call it out and make change. And so if you're finding out about Aboriginal movements, First Nations justice movements through other solidarity actions, fantastic. But look deep into yourself and why you're here. Don't be here just because it's trendy. Don't be here just because it makes you look like a good person. You have to be here for something deeper and more intrinsic than that. And so you have to do some soul searching before you show up.
there's been a bit of discussion about change the date versus abolish the date. And while this isn't new, it is gaining momentum. So we were wondering if you could explain to our listeners kind of the difference and why abolishing is kind of the critical movement now.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, so you have initially changed the date, which is the idea that it recognises that Jan 26 is a terrible day. It's the start of kind of a more formal invasion of our country, the first violation of one of the first violations of First Nations sovereignty in 1788. I mean, there was a violation of sovereignty in 1770 by Captain Cook. But you have that Jan 26, it's a bad day, we shouldn't be celebrating that. It recognises that. So they go, let's just move it to another day. But something that I interviewed an amazing, amazing Aboriginal person called Busy Lavelle, and something that they talked about was that abolish the date recognises that the issues with Australia Day actually aren't just the date. It's about what are we actually celebrating here? We're trying to celebrate a nation that's built on genocide. And so I think the critical community conversation is moving to abolishing, because the issue is not the date, the issue is the nation. So we need to abolish a day and we need to change the nation. There's absolutely no day in the calendar where massacres didn't happen, where genocide didn't happen, where the exploitation of country didn't happen. And there's nothing to celebrate in a nation with no treaties, no reparations, no functional justice. And so I think what this is calling for is don't do the superficial thing where you can have a Barbie on another day and have your conscience be clear. Actually change the nation and the circumstances in which ethnic minorities are having to live in this country.
Phoebe, yesterday New South Wales police blocked a neo-Nazi leader along with several other individuals wearing balaclava at North Sydney. So let's dive into it, sis, because we have thoughts. We have feelings.
Deep, deep feelings. I mean, when you mentioned that this morning, my first reaction was, well, those were the neo-Nazis they found. because the fact of the matter is, as Aboriginal people, we walk into the world every single day knowing that there is the possibility of white supremacist violence around the corner. I reflect on really deeply my mother and my grandmother and the ways that they would teach me growing up how to protect myself, that if I went to a protest and I had a blackfella shirt, especially as a light-skinned blackfella, there's certain privileges I have moving throughout the world. And so if I was walking home by myself, you would always wear a sports bra underneath so you could take the shirt off and people couldn't clock you. Because there is danger as soon as you're clockable. And of course, that's something that darker-skinned Aboriginal people, they have to live with that every single day. And I definitely want to deeply acknowledge that right now. But when it comes to finding that neo-Nazi, that is a danger we live with every single day. And so when we come out to the streets, it's not just to yell, it's not just to complain. We're actually putting our lives and our bodies and our welfare on the line, not just against neo-Nazis, against the police, because you don't have to be a skinhead and yell white power to be a white supremacist. And that's something that we just see throughout society, is that I think it was something like the University of Queensland did a study and 3 out of 4 people hold anti-Indigenous rhetoric against Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And so this is prevalent. It's endemic. It's, you know, people want to talk about a pandemic. That's the pandemic. The pandemic is anti-Indigenous sentiment in this country. And it's something that we need to pull out from the root. And so that's the neo-Nazis they've found. There are others out there. And it's a challenge and a danger we have to show up with every single day.
And just quickly before we wrap up, if for our listeners, you know, if they were a little bit, they didn't show up yesterday or they're wondering how they can get involved, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I think there's so many ways to show up, because Aboriginal people are creating and thriving and reaching out and advocating and educating every single day. So there's very simple things like following more Black voices on social media. We're always putting on events in things like local art galleries, museums, libraries, universities, in our own community run organizations. You need to follow your local Blacktivists. You need to get connected to them. And you also need to redistribute your wealth. You have organizations like First Nations Futures and Pay the Rent. So, you know, don't just say you support us. Don't say you pay your respects. Pay your respects. You know, put the money where your mouth is, because we need resources to actually put on stuff for you to support. So, yeah, get to it. Give us your money.
Where can people find you if they want to hear more from you?
Oh, stop. I mean, I'm on the Instagrams. I'm on the Instagram. So it's North But South with 3 H's at the end. And if you see the blue circle pop up, that's me.
And we'll definitely link all your details and other pages where you can support and, like, get information from on our socials and our website.
Gorge.
Phoebe, thank you so much for coming in. It's always such a pleasure.
Book one.
Next up, we're going to be talking to Dr. Peter Lewis from First Nations NGO ANTAR.
Yesterday was not my birthday, so you are wrong. My birthday was last month.
Back chat
on
FBI Radio.
Continuing our Invasion Day coverage this morning, we're chatting with Dr. Peter Lewis from the charity ANTAR, formerly known as Australians for Native Title and Reconciliation. Dr. Lewis, thank you so much for joining us.
No worries, and good morning.
Look, Peter, you've spent the last 2.5 decades working in the reconciliation and First Nations advocacy space, and I was interested in hearing how the landscape has changed over that time.
Ooh, I mean, the changes I've seen, I guess, are symbolised by the fact that Welcome to Country, well, at least until a year ago, was not a controversial thing, an acknowledgement of country. So, I mean, when we started fighting John Howard around the 10-point plan and, you know, his reaction to the WIC decision, the whole idea of acknowledging traditional owners was not really there. And now it's fairly commonplace, but of course now there's a bit of a reaction against that from the conservatives and ultra-right.
Do you think things are getting better?
Well, it's always, you know, one step forward, two steps back in this space. I mean, I think there's greater awareness in the community about the issues, but the statistics are still really bad. The gap is still far too broad. There's too many kids in prison. There's too many people in prison. There's too many kids being taken away from their families. And the system, it's still a colonial system. So it hasn't adjusted. And I think it's like trying to turn a ship around. It takes time and you've got to get everything right to get all the right policy settings. And we're really not there yet. But at least the attitudes are changing, and that's something to try and build on.
With that said, and also the voice not going ahead, what do you think reconciliation looks like now?
Well, I think from our perspective at ANTAR, the statement of the heart is still something that an invitation has been given to us by First Nations people that needs to be responded to in a positive way, and maybe not in the way that was being suggested, and maybe not in that order. But I think basically fighting for treaty and truth-telling and also working out how to do voice is the way forward. It's the only way to have a positive foundation to deal with the issues of closing the gap. So I think, and I'm from Victoria, so really proud that our state is actually going through that treaty process and the truth-telling process. And just need to see it happening in other states and also replicated on a national level.
Absolutely. And I know that you've also written quite extensively about the future of January 26th. And I was interested in how that has kind of changed and evolved as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a date to celebrate. And the other issue is, we're not united as a country. We are divided. We are divided because our constitution enables laws to be made on the basis of race. It doesn't recognise the First Peoples. And a head of state's a foreign king. I mean, Australia is a bit of a myth at the moment. We need to create an Australia. My good friend, Uncle Richard Franklin, talks about a tomorrow Australia, and that involves making lots of changes to the flag, the date, the country, and changing the structures.
Peter, last year's referendum results certainly felt like a low point for us as a nation. How is the Indigenous community responding?
Well, I think some people are still mourning, although I think a lot of people coming out of that mourning state. A lot of First Nations leaders are looking at, well, what are the other steps that we can do? And so are pushing for the truth-telling and treaty process to happen at that national level. They're pushing for... there's a national agreement between peak Indigenous organisations and the governments, state and federal, that's supposed to be about co-design and, in fact, trying to shift the balance of power. And I think that's something that needs to happen. So I'm seeing a fair bit of activity and a fair bit of thought about the next steps. And it's, something that hopefully the rest of the nation can follow.
Just quickly on that, can you tell us a little bit more about what ANTAR is doing, what its current campaigns are, especially post-referendum?
Yeah, well, I guess our main campaign is we say yes to voice, treaty and truth. So again, focusing on the elements of the statement from the heart. And so we're still pressing on those key concerns. And so, for example, the Productivity Commission is going to deliver a report on the Closing the Gap process. And our understanding is it's going to talk about shifting power. And I think that's a key thing that we'll be doing. We'll be looking at how to push elements such as treaty making and truth telling, as I said before, at the state and territory level, as well as at the national level. So we'll be pushing for a Makarrata process as suggested in the statement. So we're going to be pretty active this year and working alongside, obviously, First Nations leaders on these processes.
Peter, how can people get involved?
Look, probably the easiest thing is to go to our website, www.antar.org.au. There's a lot of take action suggestions there. There's a lot of information. So we also try and give people background information around all these issues. They get a bit of an understanding. At the moment we're asking people to take a pledge, which is about staying faithful and true to the statement from the heart.
Peter, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
No worries. Thank you.
Back chat.
Yesterday was a big day for Indigenous people around the world, with Invasion Day here in Australia and the International Court of Justice ruling on the genocide occurring in Palestine in the case brought by South Africa against Israel.
The similarities between the struggle for liberation from colonisation between our First Nations people and Palestinians have been at the forefront of yesterday's Invasion Day protests around the country and in the weekly pro-Palestine protests that have been going on for over 100 days now. You may have seen signs from the river to the sea, always was and always will be, and from Gadigal to Gaza. To deep dive into this, we're joined by a UN man, Kieran Stewart-Asherton from the Black People's Union. Kieran, just to start off, the Black People's Union has been standing in solidarity with Palestine due to the parallels between Indigenous struggles against colonisation. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
So the way we see it, you know, we both share a very similar struggle, not just in that, you know, we're both facing occupation and we're both facing colonization, but in that we have a lot of the same enemies here. So, you know, Australia provides so much logistics and so much resources to Israel to use in their occupation of Palestine. And likewise, Israel provides a lot of technology as well as a lot of funding for Australia, which, you know, in turn is used to empower their occupation here. Yeah, we stand, you know, in solidarity with Palestine because of that. But not only that, you know, even if we didn't have this same struggle, even if, you know, we weren't facing the same sort of oppressors, it's just the moral thing to do. It's the humane thing to do, to stand with the people who are facing ethnic cleansing and facing genocide. You know, it's our moral duty as humans to try and do whatever we can to support the Palestinian people.
There are reports that Australia has contributed to the attacks on the Houthis in Yemen recently, and yesterday we saw thousands of people around the country march in solidarity with our First Nations people. What's the Black People's Union's position on Australia's continued involvement in colonisation and genocide in Palestine?
Oh, look, obviously, you know, we're very firmly against it. We're very staunchly against it. You know, we think that what's happening is absolutely ridiculous. It's atrocious. And Australia is committing war crimes as well by, you know, going in and doing stuff like supporting the bombing of the Houthis, as well as, you know, in the logistical support they provide to Israel and the war crimes that they're committing. You know, it's to be expected, though. Australia is a genocidal nation itself. They've committed genocide here. They're continuing to commit genocide here. You know, they're continuing to occupy our lands. And not just here and not just in the Middle East, but Australia's got such a legacy of imperialism right across the global south. It's to be expected that they would do stuff like this. And, you know, of course they would. They're in it for the money, they're in it for the profit, and they're in it to snatch up more land.
How has this informed your views on Invasion Day this year?
Look, I've always been against Invasion Day, against Australia Day. Always, you know, refer to it as Invasion Day and seen it as Invasion Day. But I was hoping this year that, you know, because of everything that's been happening over the last 110-ish odd days, or however long it's been now, that there would have been a bit more energy in the crowd and a bit more, you know, willingness to go a bit further, especially down here in Melbourne. So just for the listeners, I'm based down in Melbourne at the moment. But yeah, you know, I was hoping that 100,000 people on the streets, you know, we might have seen a bit more energy and a bit more radical and revolutionary sort of movements here. But yeah, things have been pretty similar this year on Invasion Day, apart from obviously the fact that we've, you know, talked about Palestine and stuff.
Kieran, what are the goals of the Black People's Union?
So we're a revolutionary organisation working towards a position where we will be able to, as First Nations people, assert our sovereignty and our self-determination here on this continent. You know, we view the Australian occupation exactly as that. It is an occupation. It's an illegal occupation. We've never ceded our sovereignty. We've never given permission to be governed by this Australian colony. So our end goal is to get to a position where we are free from occupation and we are free from the constraints of the Australian colony. You know, obviously, you know, we're talking specifically about the colonial government here. We're not talking about deporting non-Indigenous people or, you know, being free from non-Indigenous people per se. We're just talking about, you know, getting rid of this oppressive, exploitive, imperialist government so that everybody in Australia, whether they be Indigenous or non-Indigenous, will have a better quality of life. And not only that, Australia will play a role on the global stage instead of propping up all these occupations and funding these other genocides.
Kieran, just quickly, what does self-determination look like for you?
So for me, self-determination, like we subscribe to the same definition that is used under international law. It's the ability for us to manage our own economic, political, social and cultural events and, you know, our own policies and everything like that without outside interference. So, you know, it's the most simplest way to put it. It's the control of Black affairs in Black hands.
Kieran, thanks so much for joining us.
Backchat, Backtalk. Quiet, ain't no backtalk.
And just like that, we're out of time again. Of course, a big thanks to our guests, journalists Phoebe McIlwraith, Dr. Peter Lewis from ANTAR, and Kieran Stewart-Asherton from the Black People's Union. And a big thanks to our producers, Sana Sheikh. Backchat is produced by FBI Radio in Sydney. Tune in live every Saturday at 9:30 a.m. Find more at fbiradio.com/backchat.